Continuing Helen Wright's book, Mary Baker Eddy, God's Great Scientist, Volume 1.
As one reads of Mrs. Eddy's dealings with these early students, it may seem to some that part of her kindness lay in genuinely loving people more than they deserved. But it was Mrs. Eddy's nature to love as the sun shines, unconditionally, with that wonderful impartiality of the scientific spirit. She was never indifferent. Every thought was important and must be seen in its right light, since cause, not effect, was what was vital. Because kindness is a language the dumb can speak and the deaf can hear, Mrs. Eddy persistently encouraged it. Regarding kindness, she later wrote in the volume of the Christian Science Journal, "Life is made up of little things. He that walks across a continent must go step by step. He who writes a book must do it sentence by sentence. He who learns a science must master it fact by fact and principle after principle. What is the business of our life made up of? Little courtesies, little kindnesses, pleasant words, genial smiles, and good deeds. One in a million, once in a lifetime, may do a heroic action, but the little things that make up our life come every day and every hour." Unquote. In accordance with this attitude, Mrs. Eddy later wrote, "Whatever brings human thought or action, an element opposed to love, is never requisite, never a necessity, and is not sanctioned by the law of God, the law of love. This does not mean that we close our eyes to error, but rather that we expose and denounce it, even if doing so nails us to the cross. It may be that the mortal life battle still wages and must continue till its involved errors are vanquished by victory-bringing science. However, remembering that life is made up of little things, we help to make this a better world, not by some extraordinary achievement, but by the sum total of modest efforts at being more considerate in our dealings with our fellow man. Even such a simple kindness as forbearing to take advantage of another's open generosity is a hallmark of nobility. We help to make this a better world by the truly heartfelt love we radiate toward those with whom we come in contact. We never know how great a source of strength we might rekindle in doing some tender little act to encourage and relieve another's feeling of frustration. Often just a good-natured smile and a word of encouragement or giving a little of one's time to help another through a hard situation will be remembered a lifetime. When we are hungry spiritually and someone feeds us, when we are a stranger and someone takes us in, that affects us powerfully and keeps us going. Words are sometimes hard to find when one is trying to express gratitude for something as priceless as love and kindness. When we watch with God, for example, go on the watchtower and look out from God's point of view, we find peace, an outgoing love, an unquenchable gaiety of spirit. Mrs. Eddy wrote, "There are wit, humor, and enduring vivacity among God's people." In her classes, she often illustrated a point with a joke. She liked to have her students laugh, saying, "A good laugh often breaks mesmerism." She would have agreed that laughter is not a bad beginning for a friendship, and surely is the best ending. Casual good humor will often see us through what might otherwise become a sticky situation. Having learned that evil isn't real, why shouldn't we be possessed of a blithesome imperturbability? The heights and depths of happiness are plumbed when once we actually start to understand that the one mind that is love is our mind. Not until he knows he is divinely loved by his heavenly Father, divine principle, will anyone ever feel loved enough. Our yearning for love indicates our divinity. This is why all creatures respond to love. In miscellaneous writings, Mrs. Eddy tells us what enabled her to carry on. To preserve a long course of years still and uniform, amid the uniform darkness of storm and cloud and tempest, requires strength from above, deep draughts from the font of divine love. The courage, the self-sacrifice she marshaled, the affliction, mental and physical, which she endured to bring the truth to mankind, is a proof of its worth, and furnishes us with the example of how the mortal is laid down. Therefore, a true account of this second coming of the Christ includes the struggles, the self-sacrifice, the indignities, the bleak and bitter winds of adversity that one born of the flesh must willingly endure in order to overcome the world, the flesh, and all error. The laying down of the mortal is the cross which leads to the crown. The Bible would lose much of its impact if stripped of the trials Jesus endured. Mrs. Eddy, like Jesus, chose the course she wanted to take. Can one imagine her choosing any other course? Regarding Jesus, Christendom has been thoroughly indoctrinated with the mistaken concept that he died to save sinners. But Mrs. Eddy tells us, Jesus spares us not one individual experience if we follow his commands. Neither Jesus nor Mrs. Eddy did their great work for themselves or for God, who needed no help from their examples, but they did what they did to help mortals. Basic to both Jesus' teaching and the teaching of Christian Science is, give, and it shall be given unto you. For with the same measure that ye meet, withal it shall be measured to you again. Mrs. Eddy, like Jesus, knew that the good you do and embody gives you the only power obtainable. As Mrs. Eddy fulfilled scriptural prophecy concerning the woman in travail waiting to be delivered of her sweet promise, she remembered no more her sorrow, her joy that the birth goes on, for great is the idea. And in the spirit of Christ's charity, she was joyful to bear consolation to the sorrowing and healing to the sick. But she never tried to avoid the crucifixion that resulted from exposing evil's hidden mental ways of accomplishing iniquity. Neither should we. Mrs. Eddy yearned to give and receive love and affection. Not since Christ Jesus walked on earth has anyone expressed as much love as Mrs. Eddy toward both friend and foe. Samuel Putnam, Bancroft, wrote, quote, she was also very sensitive to any seeming neglect on the part of her students. Prodigal with her own time and efforts, which were all she had to give, she suffered keenly when she was apparently forgotten by those for whom she had sacrificed all which the world calls dear, unquote. The following letter to Bancroft was written as Mrs. Eddy sat alone and desolate in her room, far from home she once had known, ostracized and disowned by her family, disgraced by many of the students whom she had labored to help and raise spiritually, forgotten and neglected, even by those still faithful. Thanksgiving Day. Friend Bancroft, they tell me this day is set apart for festivities and rejoicing, but I have no evidence of this except the proclamation and gathering together of those who love one another. I am alone today, and shall probably not see a single student. Family ties are broken, never to be reunited in this world with me. But what of those who have learned with me the truth of moral science? Where do they find their joys? Where do they seek friendship and happiness? Shall I see one of them today? Will they love to gather themselves around me to talk of loftier joys and be getting ready to receive them? To talk of a home in heaven, where love fills the thoughts and goodwill reaches the finest sense of all the Spirit calls around them. Is one hungry, and they feed them? Thirsty, and they give them drink? Naked, and they clothe them? Sick, and they visit them? A stranger, and they take them in? Or in prison, and they come unto them? Years have passed since I have been keeping this law of love, inasmuch as was possible in this wicked world. But now I in turn look in vain for others to do to me as I have done to them. My spirit calls today, but who of all my students hears it? Now, dear student, do you understand me? Do you think I want an invitation to dine out today? Oh, no, you cannot so misconstrue the meaning. But I wish you were all awake in this hour of crucifixion, awake to the sense of the hour before you, and the oil you need in your lamps at that coming of the bridegroom. I regret to inform you, our regular class meetings are broken up. If you call on me, I will tell you all I know as the cause of this. May God bless you, my dear student, and hold you lovingly in the paths of his testimony. M. B. Glover. Of this letter, Bancroft confessed, quote, "Knowing her loneliness so well, to me this letter is a cry of distress and suffering, as of one lost in the wilderness. It is pitiful. I cannot read it or think of it without emotion." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy was experiencing the inevitable aloneness of someone exploring new spiritual territory. But fond memories of those she loved were, quote, "never blotted out of her lonely heart," unquote. Her great need. She knew what she had discovered was divine, was God, reality, that she'd been trusted with the stupendous mission of completing the work of Christ Jesus. Would the world listen? Her great need, as she poured it out in this Thanksgiving Day letter, in this hour of crucifixion, was the support of at least a few students who were awake to the true meaning of all she had been teaching. The letters included in this chapter describe this anxious, storm-ridden period. Other letters reveal weariness, sleepless nights, and being sick from all the disappointments. They were written when her earth life was one of poverty, painful frustration, work, and battle. Her sensitive nature made her keenly alive to the injustice, ingratitude, and treachery she received. At a later date, she exclaimed to Gilman, "If only you could know how I have struggled and wrestled to overcome this wave of hatred and resistance to truth. And now I have won the way to love's victory of peace and calm." Unquote. Of these years, she has written, "The true understanding of Christian Science mind-healing never originated in pride, rivalry, or the deification of self. The discoverer of this science could tell you of timidity, of self-distrust, of friendlessness, toil, agonies, and victories, under which she needed miraculous vision to sustain her when taking the first footsteps in this science." Unquote. Only a heart filled with indescribable love for humanity could have persevered to the glorious fulfillment her mission reached. Again, wouldn't much of the value of Jesus' life and example be lost if the suffering and crucifixion he underwent for humanity's sake were omitted from the Gospels? It is the same with the story of Mrs. Eddy's life. Her trials can never be known. That suffering inconceivable was laid on her by her own apostate students, whom envy and malice had victimized, is well documented in her many biographies. Never again will a mortal need to drink the cup she drank in order to give humanity the impersonal truth which had been demonstrated by the personal Jesus, and which, through her science, is now at hand for all to embody in their own thinking and living. The result for humanity. What her struggles and superhuman efforts netted humanity, perhaps only the next 1,000 years will fully reveal. But in the meantime, we can glean a lesson from them, finding we need much humility, wisdom, and love to perform the functions of foreshadowing and foretasting heaven within us. This glory is molten in the furnace of affliction. This lone woman, who consecrated her life to humanity, through nameless suffering and sacrifice, fulfilled not only the many prophecies in the Old Testament concerning her mission, but she also fulfilled every prophecy made by Jesus concerning her. She brought the Comforter, the Spirit of truth, which would teach us all things, and also bring all things to our remembrance, whatsoever Jesus had said. Thus she glorified Jesus. She fulfilled the prophecy concerning the little book in Revelation 10th chapter. In her experience with the second edition of Science and Health, she fulfilled minutely Jesus' prophecy to St. John of the death of the two witnesses, which made it clear that her mission was to give the spiritual idea of God's motherhood, and thus complete, not repeat, the work of Christ Jesus, who manifested God's fatherhood. In fulfillment of Revelation 12th chapter, she incorporated the divine system in her textbook, by which all could go the way and arrive at the same divinely subjective standpoint she had, and which Jesus had. In fulfillment of Revelation 21st chapter, she demonstrated the city foursquare. This city foursquare is a symbol for the spiritual consciousness in which there is a, quote, cessation of death, sorrow, and pain, unquote, where all tears are wiped away. Here we arrive at the standpoint of the first edition, the standpoint of divine subjectivity, where the false sense of everything has been replaced with the divinely subjective state, where we can, here and now, see the new heaven and the new earth. Thus we have come full circle to abiding in the atmosphere of God, science as set forth in the first edition. Cross leads to crown. By fulfilling all scriptural prophecies concerning herself, which she did by taking up the cross of afflictions, Mrs. Eddy won her way to love's victory that gave her the crown. This is the significance of the cross and crown emblem displayed on the cover of her books. When we understand what constitutes man as the image of God, spirit will have overcome the flesh, and we then wear the crown of rejoicing, the crown of love. Then we will see that the one mind, the mind that is our mind, is its own great cause and effect. We must exercise this God-given authority, since, quote, your decisions will master you whichever direction they take, unquote. If we decide we are sick, sinful, dying, it is still God, but seen from a wrong, a material standpoint. And the only thing necessary is a change in our viewpoint, to see there is only God, and that sin, sickness, death are merely a misrepresentation of what is confronting us. If sin, sickness, and death were real, then God, infinite good, would not be all, and all in all. Sin, sickness, death are to infinite good what 2 × 2 = 5 is to mathematics, merely a misconception. It is only material sense that can say, what is confronting me is evil. Reduction to system. In the 431 editions which followed the first, Mrs. Eddy reduced divine metaphysics to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live, unquote. In No and Yes, she explains, divinely defined, science is the atmosphere of God. Humanly construed, and according to Webster, it is knowledge duly arranged and referred to general truths and principles on which it is founded and from which it is derived, unquote. In reducing science as the atmosphere of God, which permeates the first edition, to a system of divine metaphysics, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live, Mrs. Eddy fulfilled both the divine and human meaning of science. She states, I employ this awe-filled word in both a divine and human sense. System leads to divine subjectivity. The system she denominated Christian Science is only the means to an end. It is not the atmosphere of God. It is not science divinely defined. Rather, it is science humanly construed, as she explained in the above quotation from No and Yes. The system leads us to the atmosphere of God. It impersonalizes thought. It helps the mortal to let go of personal thinking. It enables thought to operate in ideas, irrespective of persons. Because as we study all the references to the seven synonyms for God, study the way they operate through the four mediums of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. On the four levels of spiritual consciousness, science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science, our thought becomes impersonal. But the system is the only way mortals must go in order to arrive at the divinely subjective state, the atmosphere of God, set forth in the first edition. It is inconceivable that what Mrs. Eddy gave us in the first edition would never come into practical operation. It has to come, and the system helps the scientist to rise and come into harmony with the first edition standpoint. The Spirit and the Letter. We must learn to align the function of the system with the demands of her teaching when she was personally present. If it is taken merely in a scholastic way, then it is only a tinkling cymbal and won't heal. But healing is what it's all about, because healing is the demonstration that mind is divine and not mortal. The system is science humanly construed, and while it is essential in fostering order in thought, order being heaven's first law, its function is nothing other than to help us arrive at personal selflessness that is obedient to the demand of divine subjectivity. When the system is taken in the right way, in a way that helps thought move impersonally in the grooves of principle, then it is wonderful. But the system can falsely result in an aggrandizement of personal sense, and we can test whether we are on the right track by noting if our study of the system is bringing us into line with the standpoint of the first edition. If we are using the system as an intellectual practice or a grandiose scheme of symbolism, which is very fascinating, it would be wrong. The purpose of the system, the only thing that justifies it, is its ability to dissolve the personal sense which prevents divine subjectivity from reigning in us. The real test is growth in Christian character. Is the human self being evangelized? This is the crux of the matter. Why system not taught earlier? In his book, Scientific Translation, John Morgan writes regarding, quote, the system she denominated Christian Science, unquote. If the system is so crucial to the understanding of Christian Science, the reader may ask, why did Mrs. Eddy not extract its elements and lay them out openly on the page? Would it not have been helpful for us? Undoubtedly, she knew precisely what she was doing in burying it in the flow of the text. Indeed, her editor of the Christian Science Journal, Judge Septimus J. Hanna, at one time did prepare an article on these vital fundamentals, but she refused to let him publish it, writing to him, I have erased your verities. The textbook contains it all, but so arranged as to require growth before it is spoken by those who have not grown to it. The letter alone, without a due proportion of the spirit of Christian Science, almost inhumanizes a mortal, unquote. Christian Science reveals both the spiritual meaning of the universe and the scientific means by which it can be understood and demonstrated. Human thought tends to focus on one at the expense of the other. With the discovery of the science and system inherent in science and health, often referred to, perhaps improperly, as the pure science of Christian Science, it becomes even more of a temptation for the human mind to try to separate the two by becoming absorbed in the technology of the means. Of course, in reality, the spirit cannot be divorced from the letter. The spirit, the meaning, without the scientific means, could become formless mysticism, while the letter, the means, without the spiritual meaning, would be merely mental categories and structures, and would require something else to be applied to. If we have the two separated, we don't have either. We have to have the human and the divine coincidence. For this reason, both the Bible and science and health keep them woven together, as the divine purpose requires our developing understanding of the system to be kept always within a spiritual frame. We could never really learn the elements of love, for instance, except within the context of loving relationships. The technicalities of science, the capitalized terms, the translation process, and so on, can be understood only within the context of spiritualized life experience. Unquote. Unless the science and system are working changes in human character, and the human self is being evangelized, something is lacking. In order to seek and set forth in writing, quote, a higher understanding of the absolute scientific unity which must exist between the teaching and letter of Christianity and the spirit of Christianity, dwelling forever in the divine mind or principle of man's being and revealed through the human character, unquote, Mrs. Eddy, with great self-abnegation and unself-love, closed her college, retired to Concord, where, in solitude and silence, she tirelessly sought the articulation of this unity. Character regeneration necessary. Mrs. Eddy knew that character regeneration was the vital necessity, as the following Sentinel article sets forth, quote, "The requirements for practicing this science must reach to the depths of one's nature and exact the final destruction of all that is not Christian, not based on divine principle. The first necessity is honesty, absolute integrity of thought. There are two ways in which one must know himself. He must be able to recognize his faults, weaknesses, and sins. He must also comprehend, in some degree, the actuality of his true being as the perfect expression of divine mind, man's mind. This knowledge of himself enables man to overcome human weaknesses and manifest in their stead the qualities of God. The witness to true success is healing, disease banished, grief assuaged, discordant homes made happy, and sin overcome. In the serene activities of good and in the eradication of every thought of self-aggrandizement, the Christian Science practitioner gains dominion over human beliefs." Christian Science Sentinel, October 30th, 1909. The revelation could be explained. From the beginning of human history, man has searched for the truth about himself and his connection with a higher power, a higher intelligence that guided and directed him. Among the thinkers in all ages, there has been the feeling that if man knew the truth, it would set him free. During the past millennia, human consciousness has been steadily evolving toward a higher and higher concept of God and of man's relation to God. Step by step since time began, we see the steady gain of man, as the old hymn reminds. With the second coming of the Christ, in the form of a scientific textbook, men at last have access to the knowledge of salvation so long sought and hungered for. The Christ science, or spiritual laws of life, truth, and love, will enable humanity to find freedom from materialistic concepts, the erroneous beliefs that have so long held it in bondage to sin, sickness, discord, death. Mrs. Eddy had discovered that the only reality was life in and of spirit, where the laws of life, truth, and love govern. Her discovery in 1866 enabled her to grasp the great truth that, quote, "From the infinite one in Christian science comes one principle and its infinite idea, and with this infinitude come spiritual rules, laws, and their demonstration," unquote. Within this one infinite being is every embodiment of life and mind in infinite diversification. Now, above everything, she wanted to share this wondrous spiritual discovery with her fellow men. Late in 1866, she began her first attempts at systematizing what God was revealing to her. She called her first written work Science of Man. This was sufficiently formalized by 1870 to have a copyright granted on it. But it did not appear in print until 1876. In the meantime, however, she gave longhand copies to her students, who were asked to study the manuscript, even commit parts of it to memory. As they embodied the teaching of the manuscript, namely the laws of life, truth, and love in their daily lives, these divine laws operated in consciousness to supplant error with truth, to alter and change circumstances, change sickness to health, and discord to harmony.